Hello, welcome to the Talking City podcast, coming to you from the Manchester Evening News, and we're talking all about Manchester City's pretty good, pretty enthralling draw with Liverpool. Both sides went in, wanted to land a knockout blow, but had sort of settled for a point. City had the best of the first half, Liverpool had the better of the second half, and it's sort of as we were, but Arsenal have leapfrogged the two. My name's Joe Bray, joining me is Simon Bajkowski. Let's just start. It was a fantastic game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you've pretty much described everything. You know, podcast done. Let's move on. Now it was really, really good. Obviously, the first time that City have been in the new kind of improved Anfield with the extra seats, so there was kind of even more noise, and you know, it's probably one of the noisiest games of the season at Liverpool, mm-hmm. with them sort of desperate to get the edge over City, and you know, City more than played their part in just what was a hell of a game. It was like there have been so many really good games between these two, and this wasn't quite kind of the January 2019 one, but it was certainly up there.
It was just the quality of it, wasn't it? Like,
yeah.
You could see City style, which directly contrasted to Liverpool style, and both of them were trying to work it out, and every single pass was done with intent from both sides, and I just thought it was played at such a high level.
Yeah. And I think you saw, you know, you did see mistakes, and you saw, mm-hmm. you know, players making errant passes, but then you see the pressure that they were under. And there were also like a few times I noticed in the first half, I think like Foden knocked the ball back to De Bruyne. Foden knocked the ball back to Rodri, and the Anfield crowd who'd been like booing City in possession was suddenly like cheered on because it was slightly askew. And then like a second later, Rodri's not only managed to control it, but like send it past them both to De Bruyne, and City are in. And it's like in those kind of like on a knife edge moments where even the crowd were fooled into thinking that like something had happened. That,
every that moment hadn't. Was like on the edge of something, wasn't it?
So yeah.
Like the transitions were sort of ridiculous, and it was sort of end to end. And
it was just two great teams going at it.
Because we saw the team sheet and City had a relatively strong side. We thought Ruben Dias would start, but he went for Akanji. Guardiola opted for Alvarez rather than Kovacic in that other role, but City were by far the strongest side because Mo Salah was on the bench for Liverpool, Andy Robertson was, they were without so many players, Konate was missing out, they had Kwanzaa and Bradley in the back four, and you're thinking, you know, City can really attack this side, and if they're going to do it and if they're going to have success, it's probably attacking those two youngsters in the back line. Joe Gomez was out of position at left back. But as it turned out, those youngsters played really well. Liverpool sort of used the crowd to their advantage, and it was...
Yeah.
I thought those players who came in for Liverpool really did well to sort of even out what should have been a disadvantage.
Yeah, I mean, I've just said two great sides. It wasn't really two vintage sides.
No.
You know, Liverpool far from full strength, and City far from kind of what we're used to seeing from them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not really been a vintage year for City. But they were just so well matched. City kind of got more change out of Joe Gomez being a bit out of position at left back than they did Bradley, who really kind of teamed up with Harvey Elliott, who was also very good and gave Ake a few problems in the first half. And then Haaland Haaland almost got more out of Van Dijk than he did the other centre back. So it was sort of, yeah, there were so many battles going on all over the pitch that all had a bit of something about them. You didn't know where to look.
And that moment where Haaland's bearing down on Van Dijk, and you're thinking this is gonna, the next 2 or 3 seconds is just going to be iconic for whatever happens. And yeah. Haaland does well to get past Van Dijk, and Van Dijk does well to force him wide. But it's sort of like watching that in slow motion, really, isn't it? And same with when Diaz was put through in the second half by Salah, it was like something's going to happen.
Yeah, and it was great because. You know, you don't really see Haaland run with the ball that much.
No.
You see him kind of run as the ball is played towards him and run onto the ball.
Yeah.
But he kind of picked up the ball on the halfway line, and you sort of thought, well, he kind of thought, right, I've only got a few defenders in front of me, but I have got kind of half a pitch to run. And then he's just like, yeah, I'm just going to run it, and just sort of went straight at Van Dijk and went right and went left and went right and went left again. And Van Dijk's trying to get him all the way, and Haaland gets the shot off, but Van Dijk's done well enough that he's not that great a shot, and Kelleher saves. And I can't remember what minute that was in, but I think in the first 10 minutes, City had kind of two shots and a few corners. It was a really confident start from a team that have, you know, suffered before at Anfield and not always kind of been able to show that personality.
Let's talk about that start, because City did sort of put the foot on the ball and sort of took the game to Liverpool. They had a lot of chances. They were moving it about. They looked fairly confident in what they wanted to do. Got the goal from a bit of improvisation, if you like, but it turns out they've been working on that on Saturday in the training ground. And they're sort of the moments, aren't they, where you have the chances. And we came away from the game saying they didn't have that many clear-cut chances in that first half, but it's also fair to say they could have been two or three up, because they got themselves into so many good positions, and it was just that final ball that sort of let them down.
I mean, it was welcome to football. They had a lot. They played a lot better in the first half, but had much clearer chances in the second half. That was kind of how the game worked out, and probably vice versa for Liverpool, although Liverpool didn't have really many clear chances, despite kind of their second half dominance. But yeah, I think City benefited from something that they've not always been able to call on against Liverpool, with having the pace of Foden and the directness of De Bruyne and Haaland. They could really kind of exploit the gaps in behind Liverpool and charge into that space, and yeah, created quite a few promising situations in the final third, but didn't really do enough. De Bruyne was a bit off, Bernardo Silva the same, and Foden as well, I think, could have done better. He was a bit too frenetic at times in the first half, but it was difficult because the pace of the game was so much. It was really hard to slow. You know, like, I can't remember what game it was. Was it the derby when Bernardo kind of got the ball and was just like, slow down? And City tried to do that after getting the goal. And it was a very good goal and well-worked goal and completely took Liverpool by surprise.
Took me by surprise.
Yeah.
Took Guardiola by surprise.
Yeah, and, you know, as you said, like, the doing a short corner routine with Alexander-Arnold, it's the near-post finish was quite something. But it was, they played really, really well. It was really intelligent. It was real high quality. They'd managed to take kind of the emotion out of the crowd. And, you know, they did. It wasn't like Liverpool were creating nothing at the other end, but City were kind of in control. And then they scored and they started trying to slow everything down. And it's not like things got worse from there off, but it was just... Because, you know, they went into half-time 1-0 and you're thinking that is a terrific half of football. Keep your heads in the second half. And
I thought that first half was a masterclass in playing the game rather than the occasion. And Liverpool are better when they play the occasion, because they've got the crowd and they've got sort of the emotion, and rightly or wrongly, they feel it means more. So they can use that to G themselves up. And whenever a tackle went in, the crowd were up. I think Diaz missed a chance, or someone missed a chance, and Klopp was immediately going to the crowd and trying to get them up. And if City made a mistake, Guardiola was on at his players, because he can't use the crowd around him.
It
felt like the City were trying to control, and yes, they had Alvarez, and they were trying to, in playing Alvarez over Kovacic, which was probably the only attacking decision they had to make, you're probably opening up more transitions, but at the same time they were trying to just control the game and put the foot on the ball. I think that first half they did it really well, and that there was a lot of time wasting as well from City. They were slowing the game down.
Yeah.
But they vindicated that, because there was only 2 minutes at the end of the half and the referee sort of played into that. And I was thinking that they're doing all these little games. They switched Liverpool around like Kai Walker said he would do. And they were using the heads. And then second half, Nathan Ake plays a short ball. Edison rushes out, hacks Nunes halfway up the stand, and it sort of unravels. And after that, we saw a real sort of change in the crowd, didn't we? And the momentum was firmly with Liverpool.
Yeah, well, it was quite funny, the first half time wasting, not sort of laugh out loud funny, but just, you know, the complaint of Guardiola and City, and probably Liverpool and Arsenal and other teams, is that, you know, this rule of like, well, opponents can time waste all they want and we'll just add the time on at the end. A kind of doesn't work, because it just changes the complexion of the game. Because if they know they get time at the end to maybe get back in the game or do whatever, then, you know, it helps them. But also it just kind of takes the sting out of the game at the time, and you can never be sure that the ref will add on as much time as is needed. So, you know, for 2 minutes in the first half, you sort of were looking at three or four, really.
And I think Walker had done a couple of like tactical fouls. Bernardo had as well.
Yeah, yeah.
There'd been a lot of stoppages in the game
as
well.
So it just kind of, it all adds into the idea that, you know, like, yeah, just wind the clock down if you want, because you'll get away with it. So City had put in a very good first half performance. And like I say, you just thought, come out for the second half, more of the same. And then it was an awful ball from Ake.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't great from Edison. Like,
it's one of them, do you just pull out and let him and hope that a defender gets back and he's not going anywhere?
It was all the more awful from Ake because I think Nunes had been caught offside 5 times in the first half. So like, if a Liverpool player had played him through, there's no way he was staying onside. So Ake kind of giving him the ball was the only way he was going to kind of get it in the box and not a sort of fallen foul of the rules. So that was disappointing. And then Edison comes out and clats him when, you know, he can maybe try and show him out or anything like that. It wasn't great from either of them. Edison gets injured in the process, which again, and happens, well, it's happened a few times with Edison where he sort of like gets injured and he's like, oh no, I'm fine, stay on. And then it's like, oh no, you're really not.
Because I wasn't sure they'd take him off because like, do you want an injured goalkeeper facing a penalty?
Well, exactly. That just kind of instantly gifted the momentum straight back to Liverpool, all City's hard work undone. And you're then like, right, well, you've now got the crowd right up against you. You've kind of got, your team has come a bit undone. And you've got to really work to, you know, both get it together and stay in the game.
And I think there was a point where we thoroughly expected Liverpool to get another goal, and like that Diaz chance probably should score it. I think Ortega, when he comes on, makes a couple of good saves. And
there's
a few that this guy over the bar, and City were sort of riled a bit.
Yeah. I mean, Guardiola described it as a tsunami that you get at Anfield, where there's just 15 or 20 minutes where it just kind of overwhelms you. They had it a bit at Real Madrid last year. They had it a lot at Real Madrid, and they dug in.
Yeah.
This time, what they needed to do to dig in was to take both Julian Alvarez and Kevin De Bruyne off. Now, I've seen a few fans being like, oh, you didn't need to take De Bruyne off. But he wasn't keeping the ball.
No.
And De Bruyne...
He also wasn't impacting the game.
Yeah.
Sort of in attack as
when
well.
He plays those magic passes, he's amazing. But when he tries those magic passes and it means the ball just comes straight back to you, it's not so great. It's not what you need. It wasn't what City needed. So Guardiola makes this double change around just before 70 minutes, and De Bruyne is just not happy one bit, is he?
Because I think, again, I'd taken my eye off it, and then I'm like, hold on, those two people are arguing, they never argue.
It
was like a friendly argument, though, because Guardiola, you could see him saying, I know, and then when Guardiola goes to sort of calm the tensions a few minutes later, De Bruyne's going, I know, like, they're in agreement.
But
I think De Bruyne was just probably frustrated at the way the game's gone, and also he wants to impact it more. But I think it's good management from Guardiola to realise that, he is your best player, but he's not playing well and you need someone else in midfield.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a bit ironic that for control he brought Doku on, but
it worked. Yeah, I mean, he's always been, you know, unapologetically ruthless with his decisions, Guardiola. And, De Bruyne is an absolute winner who wants to play every second and will hate the idea of someone saying, actually, you're not the best option for this game. But he wasn't, and Kovacic was terrific. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought Kovacic should have started ahead of Alvarez anyway. And it's, you know, maybe it is about being a bit more conservative, but it's also about balance.
Yeah.
And Pep said afterwards, you know, once they had Kovacic, Stones, Foden, Rodri in the middle of the park, they could control the game a lot better. You know, and Kovacic still brings risks and he still throws in the odd wobbler, but he was just important for City to stem the tide. And also, finding Doku on the left, and Doku, you know, there were some really good through balls, there were some terrific runs. You know, Doku has to be count himself very, very unlucky to have hit the inside of the post and seen it rebound out straight into the goalkeeper's arms.
Because I watched that back and Haaland is waiting for that.
Yeah, and Foden. Like it rebounds across the face of goal. You know, Keller's basically at the other post.
Yeah.
And the ball finds its way to him rather than, you know, either going into the net off the inside of the post or just kind of sticking in the goal mouth, where it could have gone anywhere. Obviously, Doku then very fortunate that he doesn't give away a penalty with a kind of daft moment in the eighth minute of added time. But I think you have to sort of say, you know, credit to City for digging in and credit to Guardiola for the two changes that helps them get that point.
Definitely. And one of his changes was restricted already because he had to bring on Ortega.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I think I can see why he started Alvarez, because he did okay in the week against Copenhagen, and that sort of new role where he stays on the left and works with Bernardo or whoever's inside. It was worth a go, and it adds, if you've got four number 10s on the pitch, you've got more players close to Haaland and doing that job. And looking at the team sheets, I don't think there were many complaints, but I wonder if Kovacic now, you can see how he brought that control when they play Arsenal, when they've got the Champions League games, whether he sort of stepped up in his sort of position in the squad to play these big games just because of that control. And he's not a Gundogan replacement, but that's sort of what Gundogan did last year. He sort of controlled the tempo and kept things going like that.
Yeah, he's been really good for a few months now. Started off very well and then kind of fell apart without Rodri. And he's also fallen apart a few times with injuries, which kind of Chelsea fans warned about. But he, you know, he's been sort of very influential whenever he's played recently. And I thought he was just really terrific again in kind of everything he did. And his kind of nadir in a City shirt was Arsenal away when he should have been sent off. And you would kind of think that he's booked his place in the team for Arsenal at home. Maybe not if Grealish is fit and they want to do it that way, but you know, he's certainly right up there to start again.
And it's sort of, that's what Guardiola will want you to do if you're coming off the bench to make an impact. And I think obviously Ortega did that and just settled straight in and made some saves. But I think again, yeah, the substitutes changed the game. You mentioned Jeremy Doku's penalty. We will leave it there for now and we'll come back and talk about the small matter of the very big VAR call at the end of the game. Welcome back to the Talking City podcast. We're almost through the Liverpool analysis, but we can't talk about the game without what happened in the 98th minute. Liverpool forced a couple of corners. One bounces out. Doku, you cry into him to just head it out, even if it goes 5 yards. He lets it bounce. McAllister comes in. Both of them go for it. First viewing, I didn't think there was much in it. First replay, when everything's happening and I'm looking down at the screen, I'm thinking, he's got the ball. The referee says no. Liverpool are furious. VAR agrees. Full time. When you're looking again, I can't decide if he gets the ball or not. And I think that's why Liverpool are so annoyed, isn't it? That I think there's the picture that's on the back page of Doku's foot in McAllister's ribcage. And that obviously doesn't tell the story because it's a still image of a very contentious issue where a lot of things are happening in a very, very short split second.
Yeah. I mean, I think I first looked at it, I thought, I don't think that's a penalty, but it's clumsy and I can absolutely see it being given.
Yeah.
And I don't think my view has changed really. You know, I don't think City could have any complaints if it was given. I don't think Doku could. It's a forwards challenge in his own penalty area, and it's a winger's challenge. You know, it's a guy who's saying, I know I should head this, but I don't like heading the ball. I'm much better with my feet. I'm going to kick it, please. But you know, for me, like the comparisons to say Nigel de Jong, or who was the other one? Some other kind of silly karate reference. Just like, why the mark? I think if he'd kind of connected with him flush in the chest, there would have been more of a case. But, you know, the still image of him doing it is almost like him brushing the chest and moving on to his arm or his. But I mean, the other thing for me is that it's a crowded penalty area.
Mm-hmm.
They've both gone for the ball. Doku's got a bit of it, and McAllister's got a bit of it, but like neither of them had control of the ball. So even if Doku hadn't done, even if he hadn't touched his chest, I don't think McAllister would have had control of the ball in that penalty area. It was like bouncing up here. So, like, how can you say that's denying a goal-scoring opportunity? Because it's just denying the ball being up in the air with a crowded penalty area. There's no kind of clear advantage that Liverpool would have had that Doku was denying. You know, you do say it's a clumsy challenge, and you see penalties given for clumsy challenges all the time. You know, like United got two against Everton on Saturday. But yeah, for I think City were lucky to get away with it, but I still can see why it was deemed not to be a penalty.
I think if it's given, VAR don't overturn it. No. I don't think there's enough evidence to show that he did get the ball flush or...
Yeah.
I think I said yesterday, it's like a bit like umpires call in cricket. Both are kind of right, but just go with what the referee says, and the referee was really well placed.
Yeah. And you have to back your referee to make the make the call. And
VAR said, you got that they viewed it and said, we think that you got the ball, so that's the reason.
Yeah. And, you know, you can... Klopp had kind of like calmed down by the time he came into his press conference, and having said that, Doku could have killed McAllister.
Klopp's position seemed to be, yes, he got the ball, but he also got the man. It's like, he did get the ball, but also it's a foul. It's like, but getting the ball is a very key element of that.
Yeah. And again, you know, Liverpool have had him go against them this season where players have got the ball and then the follow through they've been sent off for. And, you know, no one really knows. And that is part of the problem that you get with such subjectivity. But you also, every decision starts from kind of two sides coming at it with polar opposite aims of what they want from the decision. So it's always going to be sort of hard to bring people together. As you sort of pointed out afterwards, like Liverpool got away with one at the Etihad.
Yeah.
And not heard much mention of that.
Very contentious.
Yeah, sort of, you know.
Foul, non-foul, saw a goal disallowed.
Akanji challenges Alisson, and Alisson, you know, gets blown over as if the wind's touched him when Akanji's not really done anything, but the goal is disallowed, and 1-0 doesn't become 2-0, and then 1-0 becomes 1-1. So, you know, Liverpool get a point at the Etihad when they should have been beaten, and maybe, you can't say, but if they don't get that draw, then maybe that has a knock-on effect for their results after. You can't really say. But you can say that Liverpool got away with one at the Etihad and City got away with one at the Anfield, at Anfield rather than the Anfield. That'd be a pep thing to say, wouldn't it? The Anfield. So, you know.
And in both of those decisions are made as the home side wants.
Yeah.
They're still on the same amount of sort of points.
And it's not kind of, it's not that two wrongs make a right, but it's two umpires' calls have kind of balanced each other out.
And as I think we're just looking at some quotes from the level-headed Graham Souness, he was like, Liverpool just got away with one at Nottingham Forest where the referee dropped the ball in their favour when he shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
And it's a lot, it's all those ifs and buts, isn't it? Like,
Yeah. And, you know, we can say that there are 10 games to go and a lot of things can happen. And, you know, it was compared to like the Rodri handball at Everton a few years ago that wasn't given. And, you know, that is like acting as if that is the sole reason that Liverpool did not win the league. And it's
we're going to see the screenshot of this one.
If you were better over 38 games, like Guardiola said when he was asked about referees before the game, he was like, we have to be better.
Yeah.
You have to be better. If you come away from a 38-game season moaning about one refereeing decision, then you've only got yourself to blame.
And Liverpool obviously had that one. Was it at Spurs where there was a genuine error?
Yeah.
But I think it's a cliche, isn't it? But everything does even out over the season.
It does even out. And if you think about the issues that City have had, they had Huang should have got a second yellow when they were at Wolves. And then goes and scores the winner for Wolves. They've got the, the chip over the top for Grealish from Haaland when City are chasing a winner against Tottenham. That's 3-3 that could become 4-3 but doesn't. There's the one at home to Liverpool. So City can point out like big decisions in, you know, there's not many games that they haven't won. And in the games that they haven't won, they can point out some big decisions in quite a few of them to say that could have changed the course. So, you know, Liverpool has been the most high profile with the Spurs one. But, you know, they have also, like against Forest, got away with one. Did Arsenal get away with one with Havertz not being sent off and then going on to score the winner on Saturday? Yeah, things happen. And it's, you know, we would all love, I don't think we would love every decision to be right, because then people wouldn't have anything to moan about. But, you know, we'd all love everything to be equal and fair. And that isn't life in a 38 game season. You know, you'd love for all the squads to be fit all the time. You'd love for everyone to be at the best form, but not, you've got to deal with different stuff. And, you know, I feel like it was a game where both teams could have won it, but Liverpool didn't really do enough to win it, just as City didn't. So even though they could have won it, like, shouldn't really use the penalty shout.
I think at the end of the game, was it 6 shots on target each?
Yeah,
quality chances.
Yeah, and, you know, as under the cosh as City were in the second half, they had the better chances.
Yeah.
Stocky at the inside of the post and Foden.
On another day, that flies in the back of the net.
Foden manages to hit the bar. Yeah. I think Kelleher pushed it onto
his face. Yeah.
And then it came onto his face and off his arm. And
if that was the goal that won it for City, which gave him them the title on the plate.
But it was the sort of fluke thing that absolutely could have gone in.
When you compared it to the sort of Stones deflection in the 2019 game where he clears it off the line. And
yeah, and again, you know, sometimes these things go for you and sometimes they don't. So, you know, City could counter two bits in that second half that very closely went against them.
I mean, we should expect by now the reaction to such decisions is sort of over the top and hysterical, but I don't see it's that big an issue. And I'm going to say thank you because you've named all of those incidents which will form a piece of mine that I'm in the middle of writing. So it is just one of them where, you like say, if at the end of the season you're saying this decision cost us, it's been a
mantra of City's success.
Yeah.
Guardiola, all the time. Nobody has helped us. We have done this for ourselves. We have done everything for ourselves. And, you know, some people might want to point out places where referees have helped them, but, you know, that hasn't really been the reason.
I think one example of that could be that, was it Ake or Akanji was offside, was it against Fulham?
Yeah.
Clearly offside.
Yeah.
City go and win.
Yeah.
By four or five goals, it's how you deal with that, isn't it? And
And, you know, teams will... I hate saying things even themselves out because they don't. But it's just how you've just got to get on with it. Yeah. That is the unfortunate kind of Brexit attitude of the day.
I do think that City's players, because I was waiting in the mix zone, they all looked exhausted for one. But there was sort of a mixture of relief, but also disappointment. Like, they were ahead, they did let the game slip.
Yeah.
But also they know they worked really hard and they showed a different side to the game, and that can help them as well. Doku did speak to a Belgian journalist and he said no to an interview to us, so I wouldn't dream of telling, putting words in his mouth, but he was reenacting the penalty incident. And I think you can infer from that what he thinks of it, but it is a subjective thing, isn't it?
And, you know, the thing is, I'm sure Doku will have been told by everyone at City, do not do that again, because you are at
just
risk
put your head on the
of the referees deciding against you, and that can happen. But you know, Kyle Walker risked Michael Oliver being like overly harsh when he was making a few fouls in the first half, and
Bernardo as well had a five minute period where
good defending or good game management from Walker. Or do you say on another day, a referee could have ruled differently? But then Walker is experienced enough to know how Michael Oliver referees and will have been told before the game how Michael Oliver wanted to referee the game. So,
and I thought he did referee it very well.
Considering
everything at stake and the atmosphere and the tensions and that.
Yeah. And it's these, you know, there were 1,000 things going on and everything was part of that. And it was a great spectacle, and it was a both sides, like you say, were happy with the point, but also a bit tinge of sadness that they couldn't get the win. And that's how it. That is how a lot of these games between the between Guardiola City and Klopp's Liverpool have been, and it was, you know, really exciting, and for us it was a privilege to be there, which a horrible cliche, but you know, it obviously is every week, but when you just sat watching that, you're like, oh my god, this is brilliant.
I'm reluctant to say this on a City podcast as well, but the atmosphere was really good as well.
It was
the second half. I thought it was going to be a bit pantomime at the start. They were booing any mention of City. I was like, come on, lads. But
yeah,
it really sort of added to the occasion.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, I think the Anfield sort of atmosphere is really good on nights like that or on days like that. And then, you know, there's kind of, it gets a bit mythologized to be that it's like that all the time. When it's not, and Klopp has had to G them up plenty of times.
Having sat in that away end as a lower league fan, I can tell you it's not like that all the time.
No. And Klopp was Klopp was G'ing them up during the game yesterday. But, you know, it was really, really good, and it was really loud. And City will hope that they can reproduce something similar when Arsenal come to the Etihad.
A good place to leave this one. It's almost a shame that that picture of the penalty incident is the one that's on all the back pages, because it didn't tell the story of the game.
Yeah.
It's such a wider, high quality game. And the fact that Klopp and Pep were just smiling afterwards, I think says everything. We'll be back for part three to discuss a little bit more about Guardiola and Klopp, who's at their last time of meeting, and a couple of other things as we look forward to the FA Cup. Hello, welcome back to the Talking City podcast, part three. Now, Guardiola was sort of keen to say that might not be the last time him and Jurgen Klopp face each other on the touchline. He pointed out that both of them are still in the FA Cup and seemed pretty confident that Liverpool would get through against Man United, didn't he, when he was previewing the game. But he's confident that Klopp will go back into management. Guardiola's sort of talking about his moves after City without saying he's putting a deadline on his time at City. They could meet in international football, there's loads of places they could meet again on the touchline, but it felt like if this was the final match between them, it was quite a fitting one, because it was, both of them have sort of perfected their styles. It's just ingrained throughout the club, the fact that youngsters are in both squads supplementing the first team, playing exactly how the manager wants. It feels like it was sort of a culmination, and we saw the best of both in that game.
And it, you know, like I said, neither was a vintage side, but they both played in the styles that made them unmistakably the mark of their manager.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the mark of the manager has moved on. You know, it's no real surprise that Klopp and Guardiola have stayed at the top for so long, because they've adapted.
Yeah.
Pep came with this tiki-taka man, and he likes players to pass the ball and make short passes, but he's adapted so much to English football and changed, you know, so much of what he did in Germany and Spain, because you need to if you want to win. And, you know, I thought it was quite fitting that Klopp came out afterwards and was like, we have never seen City do that short, low set piece corner. Like, it completely took me by surprise. We weren't expecting it. And then, you know, for Pep to come out and say, I've never seen Liverpool's midfield do that to us. They've got the players now that can pass through us rather than just kind of going long passes to Mane and Salah and sort of them tearing at the fullbacks, you know.
And Klopp said he's never seen City on the ropes like that.
No.
Like that second half.
Yeah, but also said it was like the best 53 minutes they've had that second half against City, and like one of the proudest moments of his coaching career, which... it's a long old coaching career, and he's achieved a lot. So
that's quite a Pep statement, isn't it?
It is quite a Pep statement, yeah. So you know, it was two managers at the top of their game, and you know, Jurgen Klopp has said that he's tired, and that is all fine. But even with him being tired, he can still trouble Guardiola and City like few managers can.
And I know that, yes, City didn't win at Anfield again, and that sort of long record goes on. They won behind closed doors, but it felt like Guardiola had found a system that sort of tamed the Anfield crowd and that aura that City have faced when they go to Liverpool, just in the fact that he had his team sheet, he knew exactly what he wanted from the game, he was calming the players down, he wasn't getting involved in any sort of touchline sparks, the fans behind were sort of begging for that to happen.
Yeah.
But it felt like it was just a calmer meeting between them, and the fans could all, instead of having to go at each other or the manager, they could actually focus on two very, very good teams that have sort of graced the Premier League for the last few years as well.
Yeah, and I think it's important to say, as much as City's kind of run of not winning continues and record doesn't really improve, it's now kind of, I think it's the last four visits to Anfield, they've only lost once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one win, two draws and a defeat. So they're not quite getting over the line a lot of the time, but they have improved their record in terms of they're not getting beat there anymore. And I think I looked and like the stats between the two at Anfield is something like goals against, it's something like Liverpool scored 13 and City scored 11. But yeah, it's like five wins for Liverpool and one for City in that time. So, you know, when City won, they won big, but they've not really been getting thrashed by Liverpool. And again, that game yesterday was probably always going to be decided by one goal.
And I don't know if you made the point on the way home, but it was not from open play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
City restricted Liverpool to a penalty.
Yeah, and not many other sort of clear-cut chances. Mm. So both sides will have plenty to be happy about as they look up at the table and see Arsenal above them.
I think Arsenal are the winners from...
Yeah, for sure. But a really good game and a really exciting title race for the last 10 games ahead.
Well, we are going to be back on Friday to discuss the FA Cup, and we'll talk about the title race as well. You made a point before about sort of the way that the teams have evolved from when they first met Guardiola and Klopp. I published a piece this weekend speaking to the new head of academy, and his whole vision is about identifying the player of the future, where, yes, City are doing really, really well in the academy now. They've generated millions of pounds, but how are they going to do that in 10 years' time? And what is the game going to look like in 10 years? And they've sort of decided that the games are going to be quicker. So how do they change the training sessions? How do they get the under-9s now to be ready to be sort of 18-year-olds in 9, 10 years' time, ready to play and play for the City first team? And I would encourage people to read that because it's interesting. But it's sort of that idea that City are always looking forward. They've got this academy that's brilliant. It's starting to be, you've got players all over the continent, and you've got Cole Palmer for 40-odd million, Romeo Lavia, Phil Foden and Rico Lewis and Oscar Bobba playing for the first team. But they're always looking ahead and not resting on the laurels, are they?
Now, you would encourage people to read it, wouldn't you? I, with less skin in the game, would still encourage people to read it because it is good and it is interesting. Whoever was going to follow Jason Wilcox had a big act to follow. Thomas Crooken was the chosen one, and an interesting guy in the sense that he, you know, started off working for City 2 decades ago when the facilities were terrible, and now the facilities are amazing. And
when I spoke to him, he spent a good 10 or 15 minutes just about his really happy memories from sort of getting the bus in Manchester and sort of improvising with his how he did his training sessions and what he had to buy. He was like, it's a completely different club now.
Yeah. but yeah, the pathways are very clear, aren't they? And I like the bit in the article about the faces on the sort of whiteboard from under 9s to under 23s that they have, because, you know, they do plan all the way through, and they have to plan all the way through. And it is interesting, this idea that the game will get quicker and more physical, because, you know, you've seen it already with, you look at the City team that won the treble, and who was it? There was someone I watched the game with the other week that doesn't watch them that often, and they were like, it's a big team.
Yeah.
This is a big team. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, you think of Guardiola and you're almost like immortalized in 2008 to 2011 and like those tiny players running rings around everyone on the Spain team of 2010 who just sort of absolutely boxed off football and it was like, this is it. And then you're like, oh no, now we play with four centre-backs, we play with...
That's quite a visual comparison, isn't
it? Yeah. And that is, like we were saying about Guardiola changing so much his style while keeping to the same principles. I think there was a time, I might be completely wrong, but I feel like he felt that like holding midfielders were dying out.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wasn't a big guy as a holding midfielder, and Rodri now is such a brute.
Yeah.
But he's got the touch to be able to play wonderfully while also being, you know, physically imposing and demanding. So, you know, the Premier League is kind of more intense and more physically challenging than anywhere else in the league, anywhere else in the world. And it's quite interesting if the thinking is that it's only going to get more that way.
Because you get sort of foreign players coming over and saying that it's the pace that is so much different when it comes to the Premier League as well. But one of his main points was, we're going to develop these players, but we're going to develop them with a true understanding of where City have been, where they are now. We want local players. We want to develop them as good people, whether they play for City or not. We want to develop good people, good footballers, so that City footprint is around the world as well, which is what they do now, but it's continuing that, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, the City footprint, the CFG footprint is growing. And, you know, Brahim Diaz scoring in the Champions League knockouts and things like that. And, you know, the number of academy talents from City have sort of exponentially grown. But how long can you exponentially grow for? That's the question that they got to have. Every year of success they have is kind of met with, well, how can you top that? And, you know, it's something that the first team have to deal with, because, you know, how'd you...
Well, the academy have sort of felt like this year. They've sold a lot of their best players.
Yeah.
So the under-21s are struggling at the bottom of the division now because they've not got as many of the experienced players. They're a lot younger than all the teams are playing. So it's that they've got to keep that conveyor belt coming through.
Yeah.
I mean, the under-18s are looking like they've got a very good chance of winning the Youth Cup and in a cup final in the league as well. But yeah, the league has been a bit more difficult for the academy. So yes, they've made a lot of money, but they might not make that same amount of money this year from the academy because the players just aren't old enough and aren't experienced enough.
Yeah. Like, it shouldn't be the case that you can just keep getting better and better, because surely there are some years where it's better than others. But at the same time, City have kind of built up this feel. Well, they build up this kind of reputation of players, where a bit like kind of United under Ferguson, it's like, this player is a certain quality standard. Yeah. We can stamp them with City and people will know a sort of minimum level of quality to expect.
Well, Southampton paid £10 million ago for a City player, whether they've played for the first team or not. If I plug my piece, you had one about sort of the off-field developments of City and Liverpool and how it's not just catching up Liverpool, because they've been sort of equal for a while, but historically Liverpool have been far more successful. It's not just sort of on pitch improvements, is it? It's
no. Well, I'm glad I muted the conversation on Twitter. Put it that way. It's just this. It's kind of natural that it would happen, but it's kind of also not very accepted by Liverpool and United fans that City are growing as a club. And I found it quite interesting, because at the end of last season there was this study done by the CIES Football Observatory about sort of social media followings of the four main platforms, which were X, Instagram, TikTok and Facebook.
Yeah.
And City and Liverpool were sort of level on about 130 million combined. Now, City had made kind of significant growth to get level to that, and then they've made really significant growth since to kind of push beyond Liverpool, and the biggest growth had been kind of Instagram and TikTok. I looked at City, Liverpool, United and Arsenal, and all four of them have lost like millions of followers on Twitter, on X, since the summer, which I can only presume are like the removal of bot accounts, and you know
what, on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You can never be too sure of sort of the legitimacy of social media followers. Yeah. So it's not saying like, oh, City have got more followers around the world now, but it's like they're clearly getting things across mm-hmm. and getting noticed by more and more people. And I spoke to sort of somebody at City who is kind of who heads up City Studios, basically, yeah. which is the production department that puts out all the content. And he really wasn't keen on measuring by sort of number of followers.
Right.
He's more bothered about sort of active users and things like that. And pointed out that like they started a WhatsApp service in September and that has got 27 million followers, which is like 8 more than any Premier League club. So again, sort of on the newer things mm-hmm. that they're sort of seeing real success, and that makes sense because there's a generation of kids growing up that are seeing City as the dominant team and playing nice football and, you know, want to be associated.
Superstar striker and reasons to follow City.
You know, in the same way that I'm sure if you did a study around Greater Manchester, there would be far more sort of younger people now supporting City where 20 years ago they might have supported United. So it's one of those things. However, you know, good luck getting Liverpool fans or United fans to accept that.
No, well, I'll leave that up to you. I'll leave that as your task. But no, it sort of ties in as well, doesn't it? Like the academy looking forward to the future, the club's looking forward to sort of what can they do in the social space and all that as well. And it all ties into one thing.
Yeah. But City are kind of getting bigger with everything they do, and they are consciously aware that they have to be on top of their game in everything they do if they want to keep that going, because there's plenty of examples of clubs and places where the eye has been taken off the ball and things haven't gone well.
I wonder where that could be. We'll leave it there. I think we had a good chat about City, Liverpool and a lot of other things today. Keep an eye out for the Pubcast Awards, a new initiative by Reach PLC. If you have scored a very good goal on your Sunday league team, you could be in with a chance of winning £500, and I'm sure you'll see information about that in the coming days and weeks right here and in the bottom of the video. So give us a follow if you're listening on the podcast, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you find us. Give us a follow, a like, subscribe. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll be back on Friday to discuss City's FA Cup quarterfinal against Newcastle.